And with that, I'd be very happy to answer any questions you might have, together with my colleagues here. Many members of our executive team and several of our MDs are here to answer the questions you might have. We have a microphone, and we'll take a couple of questions from the floor, and then we will go to the people that have joined us by telephone conference. Carolyn.
Yeah. Sorry. Operator, could you just please cue the questions of the telephone call?
Carolyn Learmonth from Macquarie First South. A couple of questions on expansion into the next few financial years. You mentioned that the Synfuels expansion project is on track.
Yep.
Can you just confirm that over the next few financial years, the growth that you're anticipating hasn't been impacted at all by this year's issues at Synfuels? And then secondly, on the polymers' significant increase in capacity over the next few financial years, at what point do you anticipate that both in South Africa and in Iran, the new capacity will be up and running, up and running at full capacity? And then similarly for Oryx, you've mentioned the startup, but when do you believe that the Oryx plant will be running at full capacity?
Thanks, Carolyn. Leon, if you can answer the last one. Benny, would you like to speak to the first one about the growth project at Synfuels and whether that's on track?
Yep. The growth project, as you know, as Pat indicated, is going to be based on gas, and that gives us an ability to get it much quicker than if we were going to go only on coal. So it's two-phased. The first phase is going to be on gas, and the second phase, obviously, is going to be looking at the options of trying to put in fine coal technology. However, there are other options of improving our productivity. It's about the availability of our plant. As you know, the flexibility of our plant, or rather the response to profitability of our plant, is largely driven by what the price of crude is. And if we can drive the volumes and the price of crude is high, then we make more money. The second part of it is about the cost of product. So the two things that we're going to be driving at the moment is trying to make sure that the plant is available. You will also know that in the past we've had several problems with our gasifiers and about the longevity of their operations. As I speak, we are looking at introducing different type of technology on our gasifiers that have got a better life and therefore much more reliable. So while we're going on in the next 10 years into the gas growth, there are other efforts that we're putting in to ensure that the plant availability is retained.
Thanks, Benny. And in short, the shutdowns and the impacts that we've had are not expected to continue or impact on those growth plans into the future. The second question was regarding the additional polymers capacity. Rainer, would you like to speak to that? You got a microphone?
Thank you, Pat. So in a nutshell, Caroline, from Turbo, we are expecting in the fourth quarter of this calendar year to come up with production. The same applies also in terms of urea. But there we have to take into account that the whole supply chain has to be filled as well, and we are planning to go through the market beginning of next calendar year. Thank you.
Thank you, Leon.
Thank you, Pat. Caroline, the Oryx plant is currently in a ramp-up phase. Obviously, we will use all our experience and knowledge to accelerate as much as we can. But this is a complex facility that needs a lot of integration to reach maximum capacity. Our experience has shown in the past, you know, the Secunda plants and other international plants of this nature, it can take anything up to 18 to 24 months to reach maximum capacity. That's our challenge, is to improve on that, and we're confident that we'll improve on that, but it will take us some time to get to maximum capacity.
Yeah, no, I think we can do a bit better than 24 months. So there's a challenge for him, yeah.
Yes, good afternoon. It's Edward Westlake at Credit Suisse. You talk about the engineering and contracting capacity of the industry is quite tight. Would you be prepared, like Exxon, for example, to defer or delay projects to make sure that the costs are absolutely right, or do you feel you can proceed? And to be more specific, when you look at the list of projects such as Algeria, GTL, or Australia, GTL, or China, I mean, when realistically do you think you can come to market with a project and FID?
Mm. Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer, because it seems to me that the situation in the E&C industry is trending worse rather than better at this point in time. But our philosophy is to proceed with the projects as long as they give us the hurdle rates that we, the rates of return that we require, meet our hurdle rates. So we're not deliberately delaying anything in the hopes that the ENC business is going to improve. Rather than that, we're looking at ways such as staffing up our own project management capacity so that we can bear probably more of the risk but get better prices from the contracting world so that we can proceed with these. We're also developing our long-term relationships with several of the engineering companies and suppliers to make sure that if we roll out X number of GTL plants that we have a preferred relationship with them, which also is a way of driving costs down. So no, we're not planning to hold back on anything. We will proceed as fast as we possibly can. Because these projects are pretty robust, we believe they will meet the hurdle rates that we are looking for there. Have I picked up most of the question? Thanks very much, Joe. Then you head off.
Yeah, Carl Rasmussen from Avior Research. Pat, can you comment on the impact of the development of the GTL industry of the cancellation of Exxon's Qatar project?
Yeah, it's difficult for us to comment on a competitor's state of play. We got the news, as you did, a couple of weeks ago. For those that don't know, Exxon was also had an ambition like ourselves, and as Shell has, to build a GTL plant in Qatar. In fact, ExxonMobil was around there when I first went to Qatar many years ago. They were mooting a project at that point in time. So it comes as no surprise to us that they're not going ahead, because when we were keeping an eye on their developments and whether they were running their test facilities or whether they weren't, and it seems that they weren't actually doing much in the development of GTL in the recent time. Frankly, we believe ours is the most cost-competitive technology. We think our competitors' technology is more expensive than ours, and probably that combined with the high capital costs of projects of this nature at this time, they decided it wasn't something they wished to pursue. We don't think it's a reflection on the GTL industry. This is something we've been doing for 50 years. ExxonMobil has a 300-barrel-a-day test facility in Baton Rouge, which I don't think they've run for many years. So we're in different leagues as far as we're concerned, and we're convinced that we can make this, we know it, we can make it commercially viable as we're doing with Oryx at the moment. And despite the higher capital costs, we will make future projects viable as well. That's about all I can say, I guess, Kelt. Gerard.
Thank you, Gerard Engelbrecht, Citigroup. Pat, I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, you've again increased your provisions in the SSI division. Are these provisions related to the performance guarantees that you've given at Oryx? And if not, what are they related to?
We mentioned this last time, Gerard, is that we have, in the light of this being a new technology, and in the light of us giving certain performance guarantees, actually many years ago, in terms of the throughput of the plant, in terms of the catalyst performance, these were given many years ago, and obviously we've continued to study the technology at our R&D facilities and so on. And on the basis of that, we think while there's nothing that will materially impact the economics of these projects, in terms of performance guarantees, we think it's prudent to increase the amount of provisioning that we've done. So let me emphasize, no issue in terms of the viability of the projects, but just because we're the technology supplier, and all technology suppliers have to provide performance guarantees, we believe it's wise to up our reserves in this area, our provisions in this area. Leon, would you like to add?
No, Pat, I think that's a good explanation. I think
thank you. And secondly,
Gerard, please go ahead with your next question, then we need to take some international callers. Thank you, Kevin.
Would you venture an opinion as to whether the incentives and tax suggestions made by the windfall tax task team are actually sufficient for you to go ahead with Project Mafuta? I mean, does it make economic sense within the parameters as they have suggested?
Gerard, it's too early to tell what the, first of all, and on the one hand, what the windfall tax situation is, because we're still busy studying that fairly lengthy report, and we need to take a view as to what that report is saying to us, and it's too early for us to do that. And on the other hand, as Benny will tell you, Project Mufuta is at a very early stage of development. I mean, we honestly don't even know what the capital cost is with any degree of accuracy at all. So that has to go through its own economic hurdles. But obviously, the more a project is taxed, the less likely it is to be viable. So directionally, one must make that comment. I'm optimistic, though, and Benny, please come in behind me here. I'm optimistic, though, that if we have a win-win situation between what we can do in terms of new liquid fuels capacity and the country's requirement, that in the discussions that we're going to be having with Treasury and government in general, that we will find a win-win situation in that for us. Benny, would you like to add?
No, I think you've covered that better.
Thank you.
Your operator, could we have the questions from the conference call, please?
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Bernard Peake from Wall Street Access. Please state your question, sir.
Yes, good afternoon, Pat and gentlemen, Christina. A question for you on GTL outside of Qatar. You mentioned, Pat, that you have a couple of commercial terms that still need to be worked out in Australia, but yet you're obviously close enough that you made the announcement with Chevron. Could you talk about what needs to be done yet and the time frame which you hope to resolve those remaining issues, and then also just sort of do kind of a around-the-world tour of GTL, you do sort of what's happening in Algeria and other places as well.
Hi, Bernie. Good afternoon to you. Yeah, we'll certainly do that for you, but I'm going to ask Leon Strauss to do that. I'm sure you know Leon well. Yeah.
Yes, there is some commercial closure still need to be done on Australia GTL, and mostly linked to the gas supply and the conditions for gas supply and gas supply to subsequent expansion projects. And we still like to finalize that as soon as possible. It's difficult to put a timetable on that, but we're negotiating with our partners, so at least we're in regular contact.
Leon, some of the other projects around the world, would you like to comment on?
Firstly, EGTL, the Nigerian project, the KBR, our contractor, have moved on site. We have started construction. This is a specifically difficult time of the year. We're having elections in April of this year, but so far we've dealt with it in a safe manner, which is the most highest priority for us. Our CTL projects, we are doing, you know, all of them are in study phases in China. We've opened our official opening of our office, which was a high-profile event in October of last year. We've subsequently opened a small representative office in India. Just maybe mention on that as a question this morning, one of the conditions we need there to be met is for the Indian government to allow the use of coal in the manufacturing of coal-to-liquid products. And I was very pleased to see last week when the Minister of Finance, during his budget speech, have announced that Cabinet will now approve this soon. In America, the studies are still in a very early stage.
Thank you. Bernie, I hope that answers you.
Well, just a little bit more granularity, as they say, with regard to the gas supply. I know that that's obviously the big issue, but I mean, if you could provide a little bit more specificity, what exactly are the issues? Is it the set-aside that the Western Australian government wants on that gas? Is that the primary issue? Because you're talking about negotiating only with Chevron. There's no other vendors, no other gas providers involved other than Chevron. So I don't quite understand what the problem is.
One of the advances we've made as far as the GTL project in Australia is concerned is that previously the gas was owned by a consortium of companies. Now, Chevron have managed now to sustain the sole ownership of the facility that we're talking about. So the discussion of the first rounds of gas to that facility only lies within the ambit of Chevron. We can later on bring in some more parties, but right now we are having the discussion with Chevron. Obviously, we cannot disclose the content of commercial discussions. We would like to do that, and once we've reached agreement, I think then we'll make a public announcement. Sorry.
Bernie, I think that, so you know what the issue then is to do with the partner negotiations. It's nothing to do with the government. And secondly, we'll certainly give you a shout when we finalize those last commercial aspects. I think it's important to know that we are continuing with the feasibility study. If we wouldn't be doing that if we were so far apart on a particular issue or two that it wasn't worth us going ahead with the feasibility study at this time.
Operator, any more questions?
Good. Shall we take a question here in the audience? Hi.
It's on, Jonathan.
On. It's Jonathan Kennedy, good from Deutsche here. Pat, just there's been some pretty wide guidance on when Qatar Phase 1 will be at optimal operating capacity. Can you perhaps give us an indication in the shorter term of the expected tonnage that you expect to ship over the next 3 to 6 months? And then also you mentioned about the cost competitive nature of your technology. Phase 2 of Qatar, do you have any indications, indicative ranges that you could express in terms of a capex cost per barrel that would you know, give us an idea of the cost experiences, your inflation you're likely to experience?
Yeah, they're both tricky questions to answer. In terms of the Oryx ramp-up, because that's really whether you ask it in terms of barrel or time at percentage throughput, it's the same question. And we're reluctant to give that exactly. We're in a ramp-up phase. We can say we budgeted for a certain ramp-up over a fairly extended period of time. Obviously, we had to communicate this to the banks that did the project findings for the project. And we're happy to say that as far as that ramp is concerned, we're pretty much on target. Are we going to reach full production in the next couple of months? Probably not. Is it going to take us 2 years, as Leon said? It's definitely not going to take us 2 years. So somewhere in between there is the answer. And what you might find is that a reasonably quick ramp up to fairly close to full loads, and then maybe it takes us a little longer to get it fine-tuned to get to the full nameplate capacity. And that probably is the best guidance we can give you at this point in time. The second part of the question, forgive me, Jonathan, I missed it.
Just related to possible capex cost estimates.
Leon, I think it's too early days, but please, would you like to address that?
But the same question was asked last time, so maybe I can just repeat what we said last time, is that the Oryx 1's capital cost in the region of $30 per daily barrel. We have done subsequent studies, obviously not in detail, but we have seen quite an increase that have come with market development in terms of the increase in the cost of steel and related labor costs. And we estimated that if we have to replace the plant, it would probably be at least 60% higher than what we could have built it for at the time. Mm-hmm. But this is very much in line in some other indexes, Bill, I think, that you repeated this morning.
Yeah, perhaps we can do that. I'm sure you all know CIRA very well. CIRA has published some indices. They say in 2002, if capital cost in the upstream business was at 100, then in 2005 it is 160, so that's 60% up, and they're expecting it to go to 180 in 2008. So we see still seeing an upward trend, certainly as far as upstream capex is concerned, and I think the same can be related to the downstream capex cost. Good. Any operator, any questions?
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Alec Comer from JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
I noticed in the windfall tax document there was a suggestion the government should favour biofuel investment over and above coal for liquids. I just wondered, given your statements previously with regard to biofuels, whether or not you would seek to make further investments in that area.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Good question. We are planning a biodiesel facility, 100,000 tons per annum, in partnership with our government. Obviously, we looked with interest at the wording in the windfall tax report, and we'll have to see how that impacts the project. It's tough with the current incentives that are in place for biofuels. It's tough to make it work, to be honest, but we are very committed to wanting to make it work. I think it's very important that a company like Sasol is involved in renewable energy as well, but clearly we need to make sure we do this at reasonable rates of return. So depending on how what flows out of the recommendation in the windfall tax document and how those incentives look, we would certainly be very keen to proceed with our biodiesel projects.
Operator, is there another question?
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Campbell Parry from Hunani Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks very much. Hi, guys.
Just
to speak to Iran, it seems to be obviously one of the more critical projects for you in the near term, and unfortunately it seems to be one of the more murky ones as well. We've all heard about logistical constraints and, you know, lack of skilled labor and things like that, but we're starting to hear of gas shortages in the Gulf region generally. We're also obviously very critically aware of the political situation. It's very tenuous there. in your mind, Pat, I mean, maybe give me some color on what is the worst case scenario with respect to Iran? You probably more have more insight than we do, so what's your view on that?
Sure. Let me do the best I can. I think as far as the general infrastructure is concerned, we're happy now that the utilities in place. A lot of the problems we've had have been a function of the fact there have been an enormous number of chemical facilities coming online at the same time in the same geography, the place right in the southern tip of Iran called Usalyuye. It's quite an impressive complex. But that seems to be pretty much in place now. So it's up to us to get those plants commissioned and on their way. As far as gas shortages are concerned, now this is a very large gas field, and I think just a day or so ago the Iranians announced further massive developments of the gas field, and so there's clearly no shortage of gas. And we've certainly been approached with several other opportunities in Iran which are also gas-based, so I don't think that's an issue in Iran. Certainly in Qatar, because of their ramp-up on LNG, that has been more of an issue. As far as the political situation is concerned, obviously it's tense. I think important to note that we made this investment quite some years ago, or made the decision for this investment quite some years ago, when the temperature wasn't quite as high as it is at the moment. Also important to state that we are investing in the plastics industry, not in the nuclear industry, and certainly not in the upstream oil and gas industry, which is politically a lot more sensitive. So we're watching it carefully, but we're optimistic that where we're located, and as long as the country remains reasonably stable, then this is not going to impact on our business. In case we don't believe there are any sanctions that are being mooted that would target plastics products, polymers products, so we don't believe that's an issue, although there's a meeting of the International Atomic Agency at the moment as we speak to decide what they're going to do as far as Iranian sanctions are concerned. What's the worst case for us? We have about a 20% equity in this project, so that's about 200 million euro. We have certain agreements in place that should things go wrong in Iran, that there are certain undertakings that we would get on the repayment of that 200 million rand euro that we've sunk into that business. How valid those assurances are under whatever scenario you care to choose might be, I don't know. But that's the extent of our exposure. It's more, obviously, no one wants to write off money in the case of a worst-case scenario, but you'll agree this is not going to sink Sasol. It's more of an opportunity lost. We're optimistic, though. The world must find a solution for Iran. It has enormous oil reserves. The world needs those oil reserves. So politically, at some stage or other, we believe a solution is going to be found there.
Okay. Operator, can we take one more question from the conference call?
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. James Twyman from UBS. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, I've got two questions. The first one is on China. Can you give us some idea about the timing on when you expect to make a final decision on a CTL plant there? And secondly, on the polymer side, there was obviously a very big fall in profits, but volumes actually didn't seem to fall very much. And I'm just wondering what the reason for the fall in profit was other than just volume.
Thank you. Leon, do you want to talk to China? And we'll ask Rainer to respond to the polymers one.
We are currently, we signed the second cooperation agreement in June of last year, and we set ourselves a target to finish the feasibility study, the commercial phase and the technical phase during the second half of 2008. So the next milestone to take a decision to proceed would be due during 2008.
Rainer, would you like to speak to the...
Yeah, thank you, Pat. As Pat and Christine were already referring to, we had a first half year in the fiscal year on the polymer side, basically influenced on the margin side and on the volume side. So starting with the volume side, depending and as a consequence of the Synfuels shutdown, we had lower volumes, as we explained already. On the margin side, we had a difficult start into the year with pretty low margins at the beginning in the first 3-4 months, as Christine was referring to, but then a nice recovery on the margin side. So overall, if you compare the turnover, we had higher prices, as was also shown, so you don't see necessarily the volume effect in the turnover, But again, in a nutshell, it is basically lower volumes compared to the previous reporting period.
We've got time for one more question from the floor, then we'll have to wrap up. Any more questions?
Good. Frightened them off. Good. Nothing else from the overseas. Good. Well, thank you very much for coming, and thank you for all your questions. I'm sure you'll have many more, and we'll be standing by to answer them. And thank you to my team as well. A pleasant afternoon to all of you.